Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Pearlmania 500. It's the podcast where a husband and wife longingly stare at each other, but in reality, they're looking at the double-barrel shotgun that is internet lore and history.
Yeah, the...
Which one of us is Courtney Love? We'll never know.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, sorry.
Super Bowl Sunday is wild.
It's wild, y'all. We don't have wings, but we have fish.
Yeah, I'm gonna make salmon.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
I'm using this word very loosely. I've got trauma around Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes.
Because growing up, Super Bowl Sunday always fell on my birthday.
Yeah.
So parents being parents would always be like, everybody's coming over anyway. So my birthday parties growing up were always actually Super Bowl parties.
Yeah.
To the point where like every birthday cake I ever got was a football shape. It was a sheet cake that looked like a field with all the little players on each end.
Yep.
So to this day, I'm always like, Super Bowl Sunday birthday.
So the fact that in the last couple of years, I've really gotten into football and you've been accepting of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you've been accepting of it because you're like, whatever, it's less wrestling. It's one day a week, usually. Versus wrestling at this point, if I wanted it to be, could be a six-day-a-week hobby.
No, we don't need any of that.
No, we don't need any of that. And with that being said, Mrs. Pearlmania.
Okay.
This is Pearlmania 500.
There's a place where you can stay when the world gets too insane.
Once again, as always, thank you to His Name Was Dusk for all of our music that we play on the podcast. His Name Was Dusk. We have his link to his Indiegogo for his new album.
Yep.
It is going to be down in the show notes, as always. And while we have you guys here at the top, I know you're wrapped, I know you're listening. While you're sitting there, why don't you give us a like, a subscribe, maybe a comment on iTunes or Spotify, wherever it is you like to put down comments. If you're listening to us on YouTube, go ahead and smash that bell notification there, buddy. Just flick that little bell bean, okay?
Yeah, okay.
We've been told that we need to do more call to actions. Follow us on Patreon. All those things. We just want to get it out off the top.
Do all the things.
All right? We're going to remind you at the end. We're not going to remind you
at
the end.
We will not
remember. We never remember to.
We are bad about it.
We're usually exhausted by that point. But with that being said, this episode today is a big one. Even though it's part of the can, this is actually one of the few episodes that does not have a guest on it. Doesn't have a special guest on it. But it is the prequel to our greatest guest,
which
will be revealed at the end of the episode.
Uh-huh.
But this episode was recorded all the way back in October.
Uh-huh.
We were different people then.
Yep.
I listened to a little bit of it. We sounded happy. We had light in our eyes.
Yeah.
Love in our hearts.
It was all the sleep we were getting.
Yeah.
That's a lie. I didn't get any sleep. That's
you were up all the
you're
time.
You're like this. Good no sleep. I was like, I haven't slept in a year.
Yeah, you were up and you had, and not only were you up just in general from the heartburn and everything else, but he would just be kicking.
Yeah, just karate kicking.
Yeah.
He's still doing that.
He's still doing that, but now he's doing it in a bassinet to the side.
Yeah.
Honestly, listen, I don't want to talk too much about our kid.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing.
Go ahead.
Adam's Family Values. That's the second Adam's Family movie, right?
Yeah.
That baby. Mm-hmm. There's times where they show the baby bassinet where it's in its little crib and it's just shaking and noises are coming from it. That is our child.
Accurate to life.
Is there's times I'll be sitting there and I can't see him because of the way the bassinet is, but I hear him and the whole thing is just rocking violently and I just go, nah, I don't like whatever's going to come out of that. Whatever teen comes from there is going to be bad. Anyway, we love him.
So anyway, listen, I have a little piece of pop culture that happened yesterday. Well, it came to light to me yesterday that I need to show you.
On February 10th.
I feel like, I feel like this could be something I talk about at a later date because it's so incredible. So many, many months ago, we made a TikTok, one of our like duet TikToks, about the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and about Jen Shah. The one that got arrested and put away in prison for exploiting the elderly by stealing their money through phones.
So the Mormon Real Housewives out in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of them was arrested like mid-season.
During, it's all on. It was a whole season about it. It was great.
I think it's all on Hulu.
Incredible TV.
Yeah.
So this picture came out recently and I'm going to show you the picture, and I just want your live react.
Okay.
Because it's incredible. Okay, so this is a picture of Jen Shah, who is currently incarcerated. This is her in prison. Okay?
Okay.
Put down your phone.
No, I'm going to take the picture.
Oh.
This way, we can have it. You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go ahead.
Yeah. Comment on that.
Is that the lady? That's the Theranos lady?
Yeah.
That's Jen Shah and Theranos?
Yeah, Elizabeth Holmes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. The scammers have become best
friends.
Who
is learning from who? Who is learning from who?
So this picture was taken by paparazzi from outside the prison.
Wait, there's prison paparazzi?
Yeah. And they have a picture of Jen Shah with Elizabeth Holmes, and apparently they've, according to inside sources, which I assume is like prison guards.
Why do they both have trench coats? Why are they both dressed like it's the 1940s?
That's the outfits they wear.
Is that the jacket? Is that the prison
jacket? Yeah, you didn't watch Orange is the New Black enough.
But that hers has epaulettes.
I mean,
hers looks a little bit nicer.
Well, maybe. But yeah, so apparently Jen Shah and Elizabeth Holmes have become fast friends in prison. Two scammers scamming it up. They're going to be coming out of this more powerful than ever.
So did you know that Elizabeth Holmes, of her many victims, one of them?
Yeah.
Henry Kissinger.
Got him.
Yeah. to the degree where she got him for a couple mil.
Maybe we should put money on her books.
Yeah.
You know, all right.
You know what?
I'll buy you some Cheetos and a bag of ramen. I got you, girl.
Forgetting Henry Kissinger to lose millions of dollars. You know what? Just for that. We're taking 1 month off.
Yeah.
You get 1 month good behavior.
Yeah, good behavior.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I can't believe that these two have linked up.
They're coming up with some type of master plan.
It's going to fucking...
They're coming out of prison stronger than they went in. There's no way.
That's a presidential ticket right there. Telling you.
Reality TV star?
Yep. And whatever the Theranos lady.
Evil villain.
So many things came out about the Theranos lady that I don't like to call her Elizabeth Holmes. I feel like, no, that's too humanizing. You're the Theranos lady. You're just a monster. But I think my favorite thing was the dropping the voice. The faking the deep voice is so...
Gotta do it.
It's so on its head crazy in Silicon Valley. And we haven't done a lot about Silicon Valley.
No.
But like, well, I'm going to start looking into more of that stuff. Because the shit gets so weird over there.
I should drop my voice. Everybody says I sound like Jenna Marbles, which literally is the greatest compliment of all time.
It's an amazing compliment.
But yeah, I wish I could talk deeper. I should have smoked more cigarettes.
You can talk deep whenever you want. Here, wait, hold on. I think I can just do...
No.
Which one is you? That one is you?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now go ahead. Talk.
Is that going to make me sound deeper?
Yeah, that's deeper.
Do I sound NPR voicey now?
Here, turn on. Let me turn these down. Now try.
Okay. Oh, wow. That hurts my ears. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I fix you.
Listen, let's do some Hey Huns. Let's do some shout outs.
You want to do some Hey Huns and some shout outs?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, because we are getting close to that grandfather clause coming through.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember, the $3 Hey Hun tier is going to be going away soon. If you're interested in that, patreon.com/promania500 or promania500.net.
Hey Hun, let's meet our team leaders.
So we got 14 plus a special this week. Beep, so let's go ahead and do this list. Are you ready, Mrs. P?
Yeah.
All right. A first one. It's a long one.
Okay.
Getting underscore grandfathered underscore in underscore while underscore I underscore can underscore underscore underscore.
The last one is the word underscore followed
by an underscore. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, no.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Hey, hon, I'm glad you're getting in at the what's it like?
The $3
tier. The $3 tier.
Yeah.
The value price.
Yep.
Before we eliminate the $3 tier.
I like to look at it as the Hey Hun tier is being gentrified. We're raising rents on the Hey Hun tier.
Wow.
That's the way I view it.
I don't think that's a good way to view it.
Yeah.
Oh, are we going to get coffee shop though?
It's a vegan muffins.
No.
So, and they're the driest vegan muffin you have ever tasted.
Let me tell you something. A vegan muffin, delicious. Can deal with it. It's because they make it gluten-free too.
Yeah.
And as a gluten-free person, I got to tell you, you got to have one or the other. You got to have either gluten-free flour and butter, or you can have vegan butter and regular flour. You cannot combine them.
You can't combine both.
It ruins everything.
Yeah, at that point, just serve cardboard.
Yeah, just eat a piece of fruit.
Just a plank of wood. just hand somebody a plank of wood and say, it's hurt no one.
Yeah.
And it's sustainable.
You just get a plank of wood, right? You get some cake frosting. You make it look like a football field.
Yeah.
And that's my birthday.
A soft wood. Use a soft wood, though. You want it to be chewable.
You don't
want to
hurt their teeth.
Can I say something? I love the fact that this underscore joke has been going on for so many, over a year now.
Yeah.
People have been trolling me with these underscores.
Yeah, I love it.
And I'm appreciative of it.
Yeah.
We have really great fans. After that, we have Tay Dospi.
Tay Dospi, hey, hon.
I hope that I said that right. Tay Dos Pie? Pie? Tay Dos Pie? Anyway, they messaged us.
Oh, they
and
did.
I was like, okay, because they're like, no, you can say my name. That's fine. And I was like, okay. Like, but they wanted me to know with ACOTAR.
Okay.
With book two.
All right.
It's not a can of soup.
Oh.
It's a bowl of soup.
Oh.
They said, by you saying can, it's giving it a different connotation.
Oh.
But there's something weird and sexy with some soup, but it's in a bowl. It's not a can of soup for your family.
I was going to say, is it a can of soup for my family?
It's for my family.
No, it's a bowl of soup. See, and you know what? My brain is rotted.
Yeah.
And when I think of a bowl of soup, and in a sexual way, I think of a very specific story that maybe I'll share during that about a friend of mine and a bowl of cereal that was gnarly.
Okay. Well, that's good to look forward to if I ever read book two. I did check, by the way. We're about 170 Patreons away.
That's pretty close, honestly.
It's pretty close, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
We got 577
current patrons. I can't wait to watch you read this book.
I am terrified of it.
Yeah.
Up next, we have Lauren B.
Hey, hon.
Lawrence from Canada. I can tell because it says Canadian $3.
Oh, nice.
Which is nice. I every time I see that, though, I always think it says California.
Oh, yep.
I feel
that's
like they
the American
should,
education system.
They
for
should
you.
Have their own money. California should have its own money. after that, we have Wob 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 Wob.
Hey, hon. That's the noise that you make when there's something.
They got a picture of a cat.
Nice.
Wob 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 Wob.
There it is.
After that, we have Dingle Dangle Newt Newt.
Okay, people are just making noises.
Yeah.
People are just making silly noises.
Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Painter underscore wiener. After that, we have Samantha Silverthorne.
Hey, Samantha. Samantha.
After that, we have this underscore podcast underscore Gave underscore me underscore underscore Philly underscore accent.
Yo, not for nothing. It is contagious.
Yeah,
I'm
fucking saying, dude, no matter where the fuck you live, yeah. All right, all you got to fucking do is you need to go out there and get yourself fucking water ice.
Yep.
Okay? Get yourself fucking parking cone. Okay? And then if you fucking look at me again, I will fucking hit you.
Yo, honestly, if you come near me or my parking cone, on my parking spot that I dug out, I'm going to show you being like you ain't never seen before. Your mom is not going to be able to identify you, and you're going to get accidentally addicted to perks again. All right?
Yeah, accidentally. X. Spelled A-X-I.
It's a real shame. It's a real shame.
Yeah, we spell cousin with a T.
We went really from Philly to Delco in that. It was a hard
It's a
link.
Region.
The regional gets stronger as you...
It really
it changes a bit.
Yeah, it's been fluctuating.
Yeah.
Up next,
mm-hmm.
Wolf, I'm a cat.
Wolf, I'm a cat.
Wolf.
See, there's a Philly accent right there.
Wolf, I'm a
because
cat.
Because in my mind, you say wolf. Wolf. Is it dog or is it the...
It's W-O-O-F. Wolf.
Okay.
They even sent us a thing, like, this is how you pronounce it. And you still...
It's not going to be able to do it.
All right. After that, we have Stephanie Reynolds.
Hey, hon.
After that, we have K2.
Hey, hon.
After that, we have Wrong Town.
That's... You know what? Honestly, that's got Pennsylvania energy.
They're from Australia.
Oh, but I'm saying it still has Pennsylvania... As an Australian listener, our Commonwealth, not a state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has some wild-ass names for different towns.
Yep.
There's, like, a town called Intercourse.
And Blue Balls.
Blue Balls. There's a wild stack of towns. And so if there was a Wrong Town PA, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds right. I'd get a t-shirt.
Could imagine, an Intercourse t-shirt. Imagine being in Australia, though, and, like, driving, someone just walks up, I might. Wrong town.
Oh,
I turn around.
I leave. There are too many spiders and snakes. You know, what's the reason it's wrong?
I just picture a man with
the bar worst. In Australia for something being scary and dangerous. The bar is like fucking, where? Where is the bar?
It's in hell.
They live with the most scariest animals and creatures that can be found on planet Earth. And they're just like, yeah, it's fine.
They
have a house spider. No, there's a spider
you know
that's
what?
In their house.
You say that all you want, but their women don't wear Cookie Monster pajama pants and go to gas stations.
Yes, they do.
Nah, they don't do it the same way. Not in a violent way. Don't they not have guns the same way down there? I think they got rid of a lot of their guns.
I think it's smart.
That's why the animals are so scary.
Oh, they just throw animals at each other?
No, I'm saying, like, that's what we need the guns for here in America. It's because that's what we got rid of all of our scary spiders.
Oh, okay.
We shot them.
That's a very American way to handle spiders.
Up next, another underscore angry underscore ginger.
Hey,
we're multiplying.
Oh, no.
And lastly in this group.
Okay.
Hey, Erica, underscore, thanks for the Venmo during these trying times, underscore, love you, grandfather, hun. This person messaged us and said they've been listening to us since episode one.
Nice.
And for their birthday, someone Venmo'd them enough money so they could sign up and become a grandfathered member.
Hell yeah,
so
let's
go. So we appreciate you so much. Let's go for the longtime listeners. Let's give you
I do have one listener to add.
Yes.
Because we did get an inbox message that apparently we missed someone when we were doing our Hey Hun shoutouts months ago. And that happens because our brains don't work. Yeah. My brain specifically.
And we went over it real quick.
We said the name to each other and I was like, I don't think we ever said this name.
Yeah, and this is and just so you guys know, behind the curtain, that's how we do it. We look at each other, I'm like, I would have remembered saying that.
Yeah, I would
have
remembered.
If you feel like you haven't gotten a Hey Hun or anything like that, like, message us. It's
honor system.
Honor system. Mm-hmm. But also, we'll be like, I feel like I said that. I'm not going to go through 200 hours to figure this out. But this name, we would have remembered.
We both feel like we didn't say this name because it's so
incredible.
It's
on point. Yeah.
So we want to give a big shout out to a listener. And Patreon member who's been
with us since July.
And their name, I'm going to ass blasting and a forehead punches. Let's go. At first, my brain said, what the hell? And then I said, oh, wait.
That was your episode.
That was my episode.
Yeah, that was one of your
where
many.
Where we're ass blasting enemas and then punching them in the head.
While starving
incredible.
Them to death.
There's
a lot in that episode.
It was so... That's an incredible name. Thank you so much.
That was a Fishbine fighter too, right? Wasn't she fighting Fishbine?
Fishbine. The true hero of our podcast.
Yeah, Fishbine. Maybe that'll be a new tier. The Fishbine fighters.
Hey, huh? Let's meet our team leaders.
Well, Mrs. P, this has been a fun intro. My dad's been downstairs with the baby, which has been good.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are going to go ahead and get started on this fun episode that was recorded all the way back in October.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to explain a lot to you. So I'm going to go ahead, throw it back to us. I'm telling you, they sound so well rested.
You sound so well rested.
Well, that's what matters.
Enjoy, everybody.
All right, y'all. We'll talk to you guys next week and look forward to everyone. So please like, subscribe, comment, follow, all those things. You know how to do it.
Ring
check the show
bells.
Notes.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Burrowmania, 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 Burrowmania 500.
Thank you so much, Alex, all the way back there in October. No, we're in October. You're in the future.
I don't know where I am.
Well, right now.
I'm just surrounded by brushes. So, I just noticed you have brushes everywhere.
Yeah, I have brushes everywhere that there needs to be a brush, which is near me at all times. Okay, so far you found 4 hairbrushes. I have long, luxurious hair, and that's what people know me for.
That's what they know you for.
Well, maybe they don't by this point. Maybe I've cut off all my hair because
that's
being a father is stressful.
No, you're not cutting off all your hair.
You don't know that. You're
yes,
sitting here
I do.
Pregnant, but we are going to be recording and listening to this.
Oh.
You know, this is probably going to be late January, early February. You're going to have been a mom for a month at this point.
I'll be asleep on the floor somewhere. Who knows?
Probably.
Just passed out.
We may have already thrown a cat out of a window.
No.
But we have a fun episode that we're recording today in October of 2023 to be played in January of 2024.
That's fun.
Yeah. And you know what's fun? What I can do?
What?
Is you know this one button that we're always like, oh my God, can I hit the button?
Yeah.
I can't.
Wait, no, oh.
I'm kidding, I can.
Oh, you can?
Yep.
And that's a no-Nazi guarantee.
Now, the fun part about that...
What? Okay.
...is that I'm actually going to be talking about a German today.
Well, that's great.
And
great
I still
news.
Was able to hit that button.
Great news.
Because I'm going to be talking about Johann Ludwig Heinrich Julius Schliemann.
Okay, so number one, don't know who that is. Number two, impressively long name, sir.
Impressively long name. He is more famously known, though, as Heinrich Schliemann.
Okay. Sure.
Heinrich Schliemann is very famous in the archaeology world, and I'm going to explain to you why.
Oh, great.
For the next 90 minutes.
I'm excited to learn.
Okay, excellent. So Heinrich Schliemann was born January 6th, 1822.
All right.
And he was born in Neubuckau. Which is a town, today is Germany, but at the time it was a town in the Grand Duchy of Mecklenburg-Schwerin, which is a sovereign member state of the German Confederation.
Oh, the way that you speak.
I know. But anyway, his parents were Ernst Schliemann, who was a Lutheran minister.
Okay, great.
And then his mom was Louise Therese Sophie Schliemann. And his mom would read and tell young Heinrich stories from the Iliad and the Odyssey, epics by Homer.
Yeah.
And Ernst Schliemann, Heinrich's dad, would also like buy him books and things like that about world history. And a lot of world history at this time was about the rediscovering of the classical world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you get like a lot of classical architecture and things like that when you look around.
So he's not reading The Hungry Caterpillar. He's reading the Iliad?
No. He's reading. Well, he's not so much reading the Iliad as he's having the Iliad and excerpts from it told to him.
Yeah.
So he's learning about Greek history in that way, but specifically the Homeric tradition.
Okay.
And just for our listeners and maybe a little bit for you, that's the period before like you, we think of it as ancient Greece.
Mm-hmm.
The Homeric period and the Trojan War is actually Greek prehistory. So like what we think of as Greece,
yeah,
like ancient Greece, mm-hmm, and ancient Rome,
yep,
that comes after the Trojan War and all those different things. All
right.
So there was like a dark age in between and a bunch of other random stuff that happened. So like there's a separation there.
Okay.
Just want to right, go ahead and lay that in.
The Homer.
Heinrich Schliemann was the fifth of nine children.
Okay, great.
Because mom.
Doing her job.
German. Well, then the family was poor. So what else were they going to do?
Listen.
What?
Listen.
They were poor people.
Yeah.
They're going to read their Bible.
Yeah.
And they're going to make babies.
Catholics, but no Lutherans.
Lutherans. Yeah. They're not Catholic. In fact, they fought a lot of wars over how they weren't Catholic.
All right.
Heinrich Schliemann's family was very poor.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom died when he was 9 years old in 1831. After his mother's death, Heinrich's father sent him to live with his uncle, Friedrich Schliemann,
mm-hmm,
who was also a Lutheran pastor.
Oh, man.
So, but this is a kind of common story as we've seen like through history, especially pre-1900s.
I was just hoping it was a fun uncle. It was like, oh, you get to go live with your fun uncle.
No, he's
like,
just no. Another Lutheran.
Another Lutheran. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Mm-hmm. Where's the fun uncle? He's like, I don't want no kids.
So when Heinrich is 11,
all right,
he is finally able to go to grammar school, which in German is called a Gymnasium.
Okay, cool.
That's like grammar school.
Gym class, period 1 through 8.
Yep. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, he's there for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts to study history at age 11. Like, so he's learning more and he's getting like actual books and learning even more about like ancient Greece and all these different things, the Homeric period. But he had to transfer out of the gymnasium and go to a real school.
Uh-huh.
That's because his dad was accused of embezzling funds from the church.
Oh, okay, crimes.
Yeah, so his dad was skimming some money off the top. At least he was being accused of it.
Allegedly.
And so they couldn't afford to send Heinrich to a gymnasium. Now, I want to explain this a little bit.
So he was stealing money, but he didn't have money?
He was stealing enough money, I think, to put his kids into school.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have a lot of money. So it's not like he's stealing money and like, oh, yeah, now I'm going to go buy a gold toilet.
No.
He's like trying to, you know, get the next generation
allegedly
up a leg.
Yeah.
But I want to explain something about the difference between a gymnasium and a real school.
Okay.
Where it's spelled Realschule, Realschule. So a gymnasium is also a grammar school. That's to prep kids for an academic career.
Okay.
So actually going to university and going to like a good university.
Okay.
That's what happens when you go to a gymnasium.
Got it.
This is for upper tier kids.
Yeah.
Real school is a vocational school.
Ah.
This is like, they're like, you're going to learn your
Lincoln Tech.
Yeah, kind of. kind of, except actually a step up, because you're still going to learn. You're going to learn a foreign language. For most of the kids, it's going to be mm-hmm. English. You're going to learn the specific things. You're going to learn enough to be able to be a good, productive citizen. Maybe a good soldier, whatever. But you're going to learn enough
yeah.
to be able to interact with society.
That's the kind of high school my cousin went to.
Yeah, real school. Now, this is part of the German system today. Mm-hmm. And in the 1950s, they added Hauptschule.
Ooh, is that where you make beer?
No. A Hauptschule is the third tract. So it's actually a tripart.
Oh, that's where I went to school.
Yeah. It's a tripart system. So it's actually very funny because in my public school system, mm-hmm. we had something similar, but they weren't separate schools. It's track learning.
Yeah.
So you have, in my school, you have the AP kids,
yep.
also known as seminar.
All right.
And then we had honors, and then you had academic. Mm-hmm. And then there was a level. Then there was like the kids who need help.
Yeah.
And then there's those kids. But this is that same thing. This is Hogwarts sorting hat shit.
Okay.
But it's done both through testing, but also through
how much money your parents have.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
A class system.
It's totally a class system. It has been the Berlin and Hamburg banned real schools in the 2010s, 2011. And they kind of folded them together. So there are still gymnasiums and hop schools, but there isn't the real school
middle.
So
there's the top track and the bottom track, but they got rid of the middle class?
Yeah, it's 2010, baby. That happened around the world.
Oh my God.
But here's just to
trade schools are the most important schools.
But here's the thing to explain to you. No, they still have trade schools, and they still have a very heavy apprenticeship system in Germany. Much more than the United States.
Yeah.
Much more. It's actually the German trade system is well respected around the world, and their trade unions and all those other things. But here's just a clip. This is what I found on Wikipedia when it comes to real schools. Quote, high school diplomas obtained in Canada or the United States are usually acknowledged as Mittlere Reife, as it's the equivalent of the graduation from a real school. They're like, yeah, your high school diploma, your U.S. high school diploma. Yeah, you're like one of our middle kids.
Yeah.
In some cases, however, students may apply for certain subjects at a university. All students holding an American high school diploma may apply for the Studienkolleg. And after successfully graduating from this, they may attend a German university. So if you go to American high school and then go to Germany and try to go to a German university, they're going to say, no, you have to actually go to prep college.
Yeah.
Because we don't think you understand enough.
You've not proven yourself smart enough in this scenario.
Those holding a high school diploma can choose from a wider range of possible major subjects at a German university if they did well on the SAT or ACT. Those who scored higher than a 1300 on the SAT or higher than a 28 on the ACT may apply for any subject at a German university.
Damn.
So if you don't have high SAT scores, they're going to make you go to this remedial class in between high school and college in Germany. But this is the system that Heinrich is in. So Heinrich, it gets sent. He is smart enough to go to the top tier.
But he has to go to the other one.
But he has to go to the middle because he's poor.
Yeah.
And they're incredibly poor, so poor that he actually couldn't afford to go to university once he finished real school at all.
Same, bro, same.
So at 14, Heinrich entered the German workforce.
Okay.
And he became an apprentice at a grocery.
Always with the grocery stores.
I know. I don't know what that means, though, an apprentice at a grocery. I actually don't know what it means at that time. So I don't know if that means, like, he was sorting fruit and veg and those things and, like, how to do the import-export.
Mm.
You know, like, I don't think this is the same as walking the aisle with the sticker gun.
They would say that if it was, like the butcher part of the grocery, it would say an apprentice to a butcher.
A butcher, yeah.
Hmm.
So I don't know quite what that entails at this time.
Maybe
this
remember a million years ago when I worked at that
the fruit place.
Yeah. And I had to be there at like 4 a.m. every day.
It could be like
it was
that.
Like that.
It could be like that. There is a note in here about, again, so one thing I do want to go ahead and clear up now. Heinrich is a consummate liar.
Oh.
So I want to make that clear. And from this moment, like literally from this moment forward, right here at 14, We should stop believing most of what he's saying. Like, there's some things, there's a lot of things that we actually have proof of.
Yeah.
And, but any sort of
but
side
you
story.
You want me to believe that, okay, so his mom passed away when he was 9.
That's true.
And she was reading him the Iliad before then.
We
or did
don't,
he
no,
say
no.
that?
He said that.
Ah, come
but
on,
then,
hungry
but then,
caterpillar ass motherfucker.
But then, at the same time, he also claimed the reason why he really loved Homer is because he heard a drunken miller reciting Homeric poetry while he was working at the grocery store. So again, now you already have, there's already three stories as to why he's super into Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey.
I mean, honestly, if I was working at a grocery store and there was a drunk miller talking about big old poems,
yeah,
I'd probably be into it.
Then there's this quote. He labored for 5 years at the grocery until he was forced to leave because he hurt his chest lifting a heavy barrel and coughed up blood. So I tried to check that source, but it's in German, so I'm just going to go with Wikipedia on that one.
Hmm.
That was one of those ones where I was like, ah! That's
why it says on the resume, you got to be able to pick up 50 pounds.
Yep. So in 1841...
It's actually just a loophole to keep older people out and disabled people.
And pregnant people.
And pregnant people.
Yeah. It's basically, yeah, that's it. The 50-pound loophole. You know what's funny? When I got office jobs, it would say 25 pounds.
Yeah.
But if it was like anything, maybe any cash register position, they're like, yeah, you got to be able to lift 50 pounds. When I worked at a bank, right? When I worked as a teller, I had to be able to lift 50 pounds.
Uh-huh.
When I moved back office, I had to only be, my job description literally dropped 25 pounds. And I was like, suck it.
System's broken.
Yeah. But I was like, but emotionally, I was carrying more because when I worked at a bank teller, right? I was just cashing checks.
Yeah, the
so people would come
was
in.
Much heavier.
But when I went back office, they were like, hey, can you do a credit analyst on whether or not this landlord should charge more rent? And I was like, I really would like to not.
And they were like, well, guess what?
Guess what, buddy? Do you want health insurance?
Hmm.
So at age 19,
okay,
Heinrich doesn't have a job. So he starts looking for a new job.
Oh.
And he decides to become a cabin boy on a ship that's going to go to Venezuela.
All right. That is a strong choice.
He's a big jump from the grocery store.
Cabin boy.
From grocery boy. A 19-year-old cabin boy. From being a five-year
Germany
grocery.
Germany to Venezuela.
Yep.
That is a trip.
That's a trip.
That's a fucking trip. Funny fact, when I was like 19, I also was considering going and getting a job on a boat. But I notoriously don't love a boat.
Yeah.
And no, that's not true. Wait, I take that back. I like a lake boat.
You like a pontoon boat. Yeah, okay.
I don't like a cruise ship. But okay. I got offered a job working at a hair salon on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a really good paying job. Then I was like, I'm going to be trapped on that fucking boat.
Yeah.
For how long?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And I didn't take that job.
Not smart.
But not him. He did it.
He took it.
To Venezuela.
Yeah.
That's
so,
a wild trip.
So picture Germany real quick.
Okay.
Okay. Picture modern Germany. You see it in your mind's eye, right?
Yeah. David Bowie's there in a leather jacket.
Okay.
It's Berlin, 1985.
I'm talking about on the map. You know where Germany is on a map, yeah. Right? You know, Denmark sticks around up around the top.
Yeah.
Okay. So he gets on this boat.
Okay.
And he's kind of like, so if you think of Germany like this, like a big pan, he's at the top corner. He takes off from the boat, go around Denmark, 12 days he's at sea, massive storm hits and the boat sinks.
Shut up.
And so he and a few of the other survivors, they do survive and they wash up on the shores of the Netherlands.
Okay.
Where he just stays.
Yep.
Because this is like borders aren't real. And
yeah.
Like borders are a new thing.
Yeah.
That's a new idea. Borders, very new.
Yeah.
So he stays there for a while, actually.
He's like, this place seems nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone, like a lot of people, and he's in the Netherlands, you know, so people there speak German.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a job as a messenger and then he starts working his way up. So at this office building. Starts off as a messenger, then he works his way up to office attendant, which is kind of like a front desk type of person. Then he makes his way to bookkeeper.
Okay.
And again, remember, this is just somebody with basic vocational school. And then in 1844, at the age of 22, Schliemann gets a job at an import-export firm.
All right.
Now,
logistics.
Yeah. And this is where his life changes again.
Okay.
Because again, what he's doing now is he is buying goods and selling goods. So he's buying goods from a foreign country.
Yeah.
So maybe spices or stuff like that. He's importing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is trading them here. And then he's taking stuff from the Netherlands and then shipping that maybe to America, whatever. He's moving stuff through.
Yeah.
Like you said, logistics. And now this is what's wild. At 22, he gets a job. By 24, he is promoted to general agent, and he is sent to St. Petersburg, Russia.
Okay.
Now, one thing you need to understand about Heinrich is that he is two things.
A liar?
Three things.
Okay.
He is a liar,
uh-huh.
But he is also an autodidact.
I don't know what that means.
An autodidact is someone who can teach themselves things incredibly quickly.
Oh, okay.
He is a self-learned man when it comes to a lot of things. And that is true. He's actually very, very good at figuring things out. The other thing he is a polyglot.
What is that?
That is someone who speaks multiple languages.
Oh, cool.
And he's also able to pick up multiple languages. Quote, his rise to fortune was based to some extent on his knowledge of the Russian language. It seems the person having been in charge of the Russian correspondence at the merchant house in Holland died suddenly.
Hmm.
And the merchants were in a quandary as to how to supply, replace him.
Yeah.
Schliemann volunteered his services, but everyone looked at him upon him with suspicion until he went to work with the correspondents and showed them that he had actually mastered the Russian language.
Oh.
Schliemann taught himself Russian.
Yeah.
Along with a lot of other languages. And slowly, he developed his own way to teach himself any language in 6 weeks.
Well, shit. Don't tell that little owl app.
Duolingo?
Yeah, don't tell Duolingo about this.
Yeah, he basically did early Duolingo to himself. One of the things I read is that he was able to, wherever he went, he immersed himself in the language completely, including his diaries and journals are only written in the local language.
I mean,
he tried to only do that language.
That's kind of what you're supposed to do, right? Like when you go to other countries as part of a program with education for a language, you're supposed to like immerse yourself in it.
And he did that completely. By the end of his life, he could speak English, French, Dutch, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, Russian, Swedish, Polish, Greek, Latin, Arabic, and Turkish dialects.
Damn.
Along with his native German.
Well, shit.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive. Now what he does during this time is he...
In Russia.
He's in Russia. He starts to make a lot of money while he's working as an agent in St. Petersburg. Because also remember that this is...
He's still doing logistics in
He's
Russia.
Still doing logistics. This is also pre-computers. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is on paper, and yep. a lot of this is based on your word. So there's also a lot of corruption and graft.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of room.
Corruption in Russia?
I know. Well, I know.
And
general in logistics, there's a lot of room. There's a lot of room to put your thumb on the scales.
Oh.
And there's a lot of room to be able to, you know, skim a little off the top and not get caught like his idiot dad.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, there's.
His father was trying to get his kids through school.
Well, he learned from his dad, don't get caught. That was his only schooling he needed. In 1850. Heinrich is in St. Petersburg, and he receives word that one of his brothers has died, specifically his brother Ludwig.
Okay.
Ludwig was living in California at the time.
There's the fun uncle. Found
yep,
him.
Yep. Ludwig was living in California, where he had become incredibly rich.
Yeah!
And he was incredibly rich because he was a gold speculator.
Okay.
Due to the California gold rush.
Yeah.
So, you remember, you know the 49ers, the San Francisco 49ers? Yeah, well, this is... 1849.
Yeah.
Here it is, 1850. Ludwig dies.
Did he get murdered because he had full of gold?
It didn't say. He just died.
No, dude. When you got cash and you got gold and you're covered in gold.
I'm covered in gold.
you're a target primed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's just a German guy walking around. Und hello, I'm name is Ludwig. Would you please sell me your gold?
No way. See, that's...
Come on. Little girl, sell me the gold.
No, this is a target.
Now, again, we're getting into some lie territory.
Yeah,
here.
Okay, cool.
And we know these are lies.
Yeah.
Because in September 1850, California becomes the 31st state of the Union.
That's not a lie.
That's not a lie.
Okay.
However, Heinrich claimed that because he was in California...
Mm-hmm.
In September of 1850, at the time statehood was declared,
uh-huh.
that he automatically got U.S. citizenship, which is true. You can get it that way.
Huh.
If you are a resident of the state, of a territory, as mm-hmm. it becomes a state, you could get citizenship
that
way.
Oh, I see. This is just yet another ladder the old heads pulled up behind themselves.
Yep.
Because there's no new states.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's a problem with that. In September 1850, mm-hmm. Heinrich was still in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
But he is now claiming U.S. citizenship.
That's Heinrich, the most U.S. shit you can do.
Yeah. Heinrich finally did head to California. He arrived in America in early 1851.
Oh, my God. Imagine. San Francisco area?
No. He arrives in the East Coast first because he leaves from Russia. He leaves from St. Petersburg via boat.
Mm.
It takes months.
Yeah, of course.
He crosses the Atlantic.
Uh-huh.
He arrives and he claims immediately that he had dinner with Millard Fillmore. The president of the United States of America.
I'm sure he didn't.
Other people were like, no, you didn't. You read about that in the newspaper, and then you wrote in letters to other people that you claimed it.
No, I just was loving the idea of, like, imagine being in Germany, the Netherlands, St. Petersburg for all those years, and then you make it to California, and you're just like, what is this warmth?
Yeah.
What is this God sun that lives above us? The weather is never below 70.
No, instead he made it to Washington, D.C., and he was like, ugh.
Boo. And then you were like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
We're going west.
So he was still, but he made it to Washington, D.C.
Well, if he went to D.C., how do you know he didn't see the president?
Because everyone knows
every time
that he
I
just,
go to D.C., I see Biden.
Because everything that they, well, that's true for me, not you.
No, that's false.
No, because the account he writes.
Yeah.
Is like almost word for word a newspaper article.
Incredible.
Of like a dinner that the president had.
He mad libs some stuff he saw in the news.
He does this constantly. Because he can speak so many different languages, he will just steal other stuff in other languages. You know what he is?
Mm.
He is a white TikToker finding black creators on TikTok.
Oh my God.
And just ganking all of their fucking comedy.
Just say ganking.
Yeah, ganking, dude.
I haven't heard that in so long.
I know. We're bringing it back.
We're bringing that back.
Unless it's... Oh, wait, I don't know. You know what? I'm not gonna Google the
don't
history
Google
of ganking.
It. Don't Google it.
All right? So like I said, it's 1850. He gets there. 1851.
I had dinner. Other thing you were saying the other day that I was like, you can't use it that way.
What?
Zooted.
Yeah.
You were like, he's so zooted. I was like, I don't think that word means what you think it means.
Yeah.
Trying to bring back old terminology. You don't know what it means.
Listen, ganked, zooted, dabomb.com.
Oh, no.
Let's bring back dabomb.com.
No, we should not.
All right. That died after 9/11.
Whoa, okay, let's go. Move
on. Well, because you couldn't be on it. You couldn't be like, that's thebomb.com. And then you get tackled at an airport.
Yeah.
All right, so he claims he had dinner with the president. Lie. Then he also claimed that he personally witnessed the San Francisco fire of 1851.
Mm-hmm.
But in his accounts, he says it happens in June. It actually happened in May. So okay. He's just lying.
He's not that far off.
Yeah, but he's like he's off by a month. For like an eyewitness account. But Heinrich did actually go to California,
mm-hmm.
where he started a bank in Sacramento.
He started a bank?
Yes, he started a bank. He has money at this point.
Okay.
He's doing well. He's not rich, but he's doing well.
Oh, he's one of those rich people that goes, I'm comfortable.
But so over 6 months, mm-hmm. he bought and sold over $1 million of gold dust.
All right.
So people are bringing him gold dust, and he's weighing it out, and mm-hmm. he's saying, all right, I'll give you $10, $20. And then he's reselling that for $30 or $40.
Yeah.
He's basically GameStop. You're trading in your used gold, and then he's selling it for more for the listeners, just so you understand.
See, I thought he was just going to cut it with some baking soda and then resell it.
So, funny story, he was accused of shorting the weights of the gold measurements by Rothschild's agents and other banking agents.
Okay.
And then he quickly fled California while claiming that everyone that he was coming down with an illness.
Mm-hmm.
By 1852, he had sold the bank and moved back to Russia.
Well...
So it's 1852.
He got caught cutting.
He's back in Russia. He gets a new correspondence when he's in Russia.
All right.
He hears that his childhood sweetheart, a young woman named Mina,
okay,
had been married.
Okay. Congratulations. Mazel tov.
This makes him very upset.
All right.
Because he thought he was going to become rich enough someday to finally marry Mina.
But has he been staying in contact? We did not talk about...
He's a man.
Oh.
Okay. So do I need to make that clear? Like he's a lunatic crazy person.
Yeah.
So.
I'm just like, he's running around the world making money and he's Ebenezer Scrooge Christmas Carol.
Yeah, the love is gone. So he's in St. Petersburg. He's looking around. He's like, the love is gone. I need some love.
Okay, so then what does he do?
So he turns to a rich friend of his and mm-hmm. he's like, I need to get a wife. And the rich friend's like, what about my niece, Ekaterina Petrovna Lishin?
Sure.
That's basically what he says.
Yeah.
So at the age of 30, Heinrich marries Ekaterina. She is 26. So it's
okay.
Actually...
Not too bad.
That's an appropriate...
I was going to be concerned.
I know. There's a lot. Sometimes when we do these and whenever I...
I was a little concerned.
I like to write down the ages sometimes just to keep everybody on their toes.
All right.
They are married.
Uh-huh.
Schliemann then corners the market on indigo dye.
Oh, cool.
He makes shit tons of money. So by that, he buys up all of the stock of indigo and then is holding it
mm-hmm.
and then only releasing a little bit. So the price of indigo shoots up. Whenever a competitor steps into the market, he then dumps a lot of indigo in the market to put them completely out of business.
Yeah,
he does some crazy shit. Yeah. Completely legal.
Orange futures.
Yeah, exactly. Like Trading Places. 100%.
Orange futures. I'm so glad that Trading Places taught me so much.
It taught us enough.
I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis has great boobs.
Great boobs.
That guy, you got to check who you're giving your money to.
Yep.
And Orange Futures.
Orange Futures. And Dan Aykroyd, autistic.
Just a little.
1854.
Okay.
Heinrich is now 32 years old.
Old.
For that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, about
that. Like 20 years left at that time, right?
Yeah, about them. But he's pretty rich.
That doesn't mean anything.
No, it actually meant something back then.
No, because whenever we read these stories and they're this rich, then they're always like eating too much pork sausage or drinking or smoking too much because they're so
rich.
That's true. And so then they have a shorter life.
Well, Heinrich figured out something pretty quickly.
Okay. Because
in 1854, the Crimean War breaks out.
All right.
Do you know what the Crimean War is?
I know some of it, but not a lot of it.
Okay. So Crimea.
Yep.
It's a little like peninsula
mm-hmm.
that sticks out. Today, we're actually fighting a war over it now. Ukraine and mm-hmm. Russia are fighting over it. It's that little island that sticks out into the Black Sea, but it's connected to the land. That was part of a war between Russia and an alliance of the Ottoman Empire, France, and Britain.
Oh, that's a
lot of guys.
That's a lot of
the British and the French, though, teamed up, which was like that was new. That was big news. And the Ottoman Empire, for those of you guys who don't know, is today, it was like centered in Turkey. So Constantinople, Istanbul, that whole deal.
Yeah.
So it's a big war. Heinrich looks around and becomes a military contractor.
What?
But not like...
Are we still lying?
No, this is true.
Wow.
We have records of this. He becomes a Russian military contractor.
Oh my God.
Now, not like that guy who got shot out of the sky after trying to kill Putin. Okay. Not like that type. Like the classic, like Tony Stark military contractor. Mm-hmm. He corners three markets.
Okay. Indigo.
No.
Gold dust.
Nope. Saltpeter, sulfur, and lead.
Okay, so the things you need to make explosives.
Things you need to make ammunition.
Yeah.
Specifically. So you need saltpeter and sulfur to make gunpowder.
Yeah.
And lead for the bullets.
Mm-hmm.
So he corners the markets on those.
He said, Lockheed Martin, baby.
So the only people that the Russians could buy it from is him. He resells all of them to the Russians for a markup. The Russians love him for it because fucking idiots. And he becomes
incredibly rich.
War profiteering Tony Stark rich.
Okay. But he was already rich from the dye and the fake bank.
Yeah. Well, he was probably like he was probably the lower end of upper class, but he's now getting into, I have more money than I'll ever be able to spend.
Yeah.
Like I can't fuck. Not like I can't ever be touched, but I can't fuck up so hard that it could all be taken away.
Yeah.
He's getting into that Elon Musk territory, Jeff Bezos territory.
Where you could like buy something and then destroy it on purpose, even though you invested a bunch of money into it.
Funny story. You have no idea how accurate you are predicting the future of this story. Henrik and Ekaterina have three children.
Yeah, and they're going to go to the gymnasium schools.
They are born between 1855 and 1861. Their eldest is Sergei.
That's
their son.
Good name.
And they have two daughters, Natalia and... Nadezda.
Natty.
Yeah.
Natty and Natty. Oh, wow. The accent really doesn't differentiate on that one.
No, not really. Natty and Natty. And so now this is the area where you start to have the split.
What
in
do you
his
mean,
life.
Split? Oh.
So before this, up until the war and the end of the war, he is working so hard to make money because he doesn't ever want to be poor again.
Yeah, okay.
But now he has made so much money that he is able to officially retire at the age of 36.
Oh, like one of those dudes on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, yeah.
He's like, hustle culture.
He hustle grinded so hard. And he looks around. He's like, I don't need to keep working.
Yeah, retire. Have a good time.
I can just retire.
Does he actually do that or does he keep working?
No, he doesn't keep working in any of the import-export fields or cornering any more markets or any of those things. He starts to follow his dream, which is to be an archaeologist and to be the man to find the fabled city of Troy.
Wow, okay.
Yes.
You
didn't see where that was going.
I was like, so he's going to move to like the south of France and go live on a beach and just eat nice foods?
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
He wants to travel around the world and be Indiana Jones before Indiana Jones was ever even dreamed up.
I mean, Indiana.
But he's a rich German, so he's gonna be the bad guy from Indiana Jones.
Yeah, he's gonna try to steal all the artifacts.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, 100%. So he's super rich. He starts to travel around the world. He's also starting to like study in actual universities and schools and stuff like that.
Is he dragging the wife and kids for this?
I actually have a note on this. It's the next note. He is trying to. But Ekaterina says no.
Leave me alone.
No, she refuses to leave Russia. So he's traveling around the world. He's going to Paris. He's going to all these different places. And he keeps writing to Ekaterina, send Sergei to me. I want Sergei to go to school.
She's like, nah.
In Paris. And she says no because she doesn't want the children to leave Russia. She wants the children to be raised in the Russian Orthodox Church.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants them to have a love for Mother Russia because how could they be someone anywhere else in the world if they don't know where they come from?
Okay.
So she doesn't want a 13-year-old child.
Very Russian of her.
Yes.
That's like, it's very Russian. That's so Russian.
Yeah, it's very Russian.
That's...
He threatens to divorce her a couple times.
Go for it. I want that alimony, baby.
He threatens to divorce her a couple times. It doesn't really work.
I'm picturing her now as the wife from... What's that really fun pirate show? With
Our Flag Means Death.
Yeah, Our Flag Means Death. Like the wife that's at home with the kids.
Yes.
And she's like, yeah, go ahead. And they're like, he died, we don't care, whatever. Yeah. Like
she's just happy now.
She's just happy living her life, and she just has her money and she's having a time.
The thing to know though is in the Russian society at this time, like, divorce was unheard of.
Yeah.
There is no divorce. So she's like, you can't.
You can't. You get eaten by a bear and you die. Yeah. That's it. Those are the options.
You die or you drink yourself to death slowly in the cabin.
Yeah. For the love of Mother Russia.
Yeah. He's like, no, but I wish to find Troy.
They're like, okay.
So in 1868, the age of 44, Schliemann travels across Greece. Now, it's important to realize that Greece has only been an independent of the Ottoman Empire for about 40 years at this point.
All right.
The Ottoman Empire had covered all of Greece. They had a war for independence. And during that war for independence, that is actually when a lot of, in the early, like late 1700s to early 1800s, people start to rediscover the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
So you also had Europeans who were going on what's called the Grand Tour.
Yeah. Is this back when they like... Because again, I don't know all the timelines, but like, is this when they started, in quotes, like the archaeological digs where they're just stealing stuff?
Yes.
Like when they started eating mummies for powder?
Yeah, kind of.
Like, so all the Europeans got obsessed with that shit.
Yeah.
And started pillaging.
But you also have this thing where they get obsessed with these different pockets of the world. So like Egypt, they get obsessed with Egypt for a little bit.
And they go
they get obsessed with India for a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's also a period of time around the war for Greek independence because a lot of people are also backing the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also a tie-in of like the ancient hatred of the Ottoman Empire and because they're Muslim versus the rest of the world and all this different stuff.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
We can't actually... What?
What?
It's like because this is going to be a future episode.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah, you're wondering, do you think it's still... are you wondering whether or not the Israeli-Palestinian conflict are still going on?
There's no way to know on this date what next week's going to look like.
Yeah.
And anything you say or I say could be wildly inappropriate. So I'm just like, wow.
Yeah. Record this on October 16th, 2023. Yes.
Yeah.
But back in the 1820s, when the Greek War of Independence is happening, you have guys like, who's the guy, Mary Shelley's husband, Lord Byron and stuff like that. They go to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Greek culture and clothing is very popular. And then after they win independence, more people go to Greece because now it's no longer a war zone.
Because
now you have these guys who come back like, ooh, Greece is beautiful. They have such beautiful land and all this different stuff. And then other people go and they're like, oh my God, look, they just have like all this ancient shit lying around.
Yeah, and there's like all really these statues, good cheeses and fishes.
They're the combination of things. So that's where like archaeology starts to build up.
This is different than when we went to Greece.
No, it's much different.
We were like, let us into Turkey immediately.
So Heinrich gets to Greece and he's traveling around. He learns Greek. He learns more things. And while he's there, he writes his second book.
Oh, self-published?
Self-published, yes.
On Amazon.com?
His first book was about China and Japan. It's a lot of them are
never
still in.
He said he went to China or Japan.
He didn't. He just wrote a book about them. Again, he's rich, so he just writes books about stuff. And this is back then when, like, but remember, back then, quote unquote, writing a book is the same as publishing a blog. Like, it's just, you can do it. It doesn't mean everybody's going to read it. His second book, though, is it's still in German. It has never been translated. It's just called Ithaca, the Peloponnese, and Troy.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, he describes multiple ancient sites across Greece and the Ottoman Empire. He claims in the book that he found the fabled house of Odysseus on the island of Ithaca, and he wrote a topographical analysis of the island of Ithaca. Ithaca, it's a very small island off of the coast of Western Greece.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing the game Assassin's Creed Odyssey, it is one of the first destinations you go in that game. Schliemann submitted this book. He writes the whole book out, and he gets it printed, and he submits it to the University of Rostock in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And they accept this as his PhD dissertation in absentia. So they read it over and they go, hey, This is great. You are now officially Dr. Sleeman.
Wait, so he got a PhD based on a lie?
Yes, because later scholars and that analyzed the book.
Yeah.
And they realized that like almost the entire book is
so he got the name doctor, but he didn't do it right. So he's a chiropractor.
Whoa!
Yeah, he's using that doctor term loosely.
Wow.
What? This is an anti-chiropractor podcast. I can crack my own neck. Thanks so much.
So it's 1868. During this time, also while he's traveling around Greece, Schliemann is trying to get permits because he wants to start digging.
Oh my God. I know this is not the case back then,
yeah.
But the thought of the trying to get permits from the Greek government in 2023 is an incredible thought.
Yeah. But in 1868, he's trying to get archaeology permits.
I can't.
I jumped ahead because I found this really late, but I do want to, when I was doing my research. So he's going around to all these different sites and he's just like begging them and he's begging them and he's begging them. And the government would not give him a permit.
No.
Because to get clearance, the government only had X number of permits that they've written out. Mm-hmm. And they went ahead and just gave those permits to the Archaeology Society of Athens.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to keep going to them and they keep going, no, you're just some rich asshole. Get out of here. So he keeps getting sent away. And then in 1869, Schliemann returns to the United States. And this is where we're going to take a short little break.
He's coming back to the U.S.
Yes. So he's gone around Greece. He's tried to do some excavation.
Made a fake book, got a fake PhD.
Yes.
Did not get to do any archaeological digs.
Yep.
That he did not discover Troy.
Nope. Not yet.
He's coming back
to America. Hasn't done any of this yet, but now he's coming back to America.
All right.
But it's to be one thing to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
The money is real.
Oh, okay.
All right. So when we come back, we'll find out about why Heinrich Schliemann went to Indianapolis, Indiana.
I can't think of one good reason.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we're back.
Yeah.
So when we left off, Heinrich Schliemann had returned to America.
Yep.
And he goes to Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yep. And my statement was, I couldn't think of one good reason.
I can think of a good reason
what
to
is
go
it?
To Indianapolis, Indiana.
Fried pork?
No.
What?
To reenact scenes from Parks and Rec.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. It's that. Or maybe to go to like Mike Pence's childhood home.
No, absolutely not that.
So I'm going to read you this. This is from the Hoosier State Chronicles archives.
Mm-hmm.
When Heinrich Schliemann, obsessed with the dreams of Achilles, Agamemnon, and the 10-year siege of Troy, showed up in the Greek-sounding town of Indianapolis in April 1869, the place was remarkably German. Lockerbie Square was often called Germantown.
Mm-hmm.
In that neighborhood especially, Schliemann would have found a thriving cultural mix of radical German free thinkers, refugees from the failed 1848 revolutions, and confessional Lutherans who left Germany to avoid government meddling with their worship.
Yeah.
But as Hermann Lieber recalled, Schliemann wasn't a famous archaeologist. He was, quote, not then recognized as a great person. He was a very entertaining talker and an excellent company. If it had been suspected that he would ever have been such a lion, he certainly would have received greater attention. Now, Schliemann wasn't there because of the great German population.
But that's what I was saying, is because I knew that Indianapolis had a big German population, which is why they got the fried pork schnitzels.
Yeah. Do you want to know why he was there?
Yeah.
To get a divorce.
Wait, what the fuck? She's in Russia.
Yeah, but he has traveled to Indianapolis, Indiana, because in 1869, that was one of the easiest states to get a fucking divorce in America.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, so he travels all the way.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
That's honestly incredible.
Because here's why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is claiming that he was in California in 1850, so Heinrich Schliemann is currently a United States citizen.
Yep. Okay, I see. I see how this is working out.
Do you hear where the lies are starting to compound into each other? So he shows up, and he gets involved in this entire thing because, again, as I said earlier, divorce is scandalous and rare in Russia.
How is she even going to know? He's just going to file it here and they're going to mail it to her?
So it wasn't quick. They weren't quickie divorces.
No.
Like today, Reno, Nevada is known for quickie divorces.
That's where we're going.
No, we're going to Erie, Pennsylvania, baby. Come on. We already promised. Shake that hand.
Shaking on it.
We already know it. That's priced cheap there. Cheap. You got to go. You got to do it in person. You cannot file it online. Yeah. You have to drive to Erie, Pennsylvania.
But there's nothing that will solidify a divorce like a road trip to Erie, Pennsylvania.
No, you can both pay. We can both pay separate lawyers and they can go do it.
Oh, okay.
We can stamp it here. We can get everything done. It's just a matter of you file the divorce there. So this is how Indiana became the divorce capital of the world. In the 1850s, Indiana legislators wrote a new state constitution. And in that constitution, the state's divorce laws were slightly changed because there was a movement of feminists who pushed for more relaxed, easier to get divorces.
No fault divorces.
Not no fault divorces.
Not those.
Not fully. But there's you had more options. Before, you had to go to like practically back to church canon law to prove like we've never had sex. We've never had these. But if somebody was abusive,
that didn't
matter. You could get a divorce in Indiana.
In Indianapolis, okay.
If there were certain things, you could go there. You still had to show fault, but it was an easier level to jump. The state's divorce laws attracted huge numbers of migratory divorce seekers. Public alarm became evident as dramatic reports described the Hoosier state as a divorce mecca, churning out easy divorces to people from stricter states with little regard for long-term consequences to spouses and children.
Okay.
It was nicknamed a copper-bottom divorce.
A copper-bottom divorce? What's that mean?
I have no idea. I tried desperately to figure out what that means.
I mean, copper-bottom pots.
Yeah, it's kind of, but I guess it's like quickie. It comes to a boil easily, I guess.
Yeah, like the copper-bottom pot gets hot faster. Maybe that's why.
I don't know. Schliemann, again, had multiple reasons. He has American citizenship that he's claiming.
Alleged.
That forces him to go to an American court under his, you know, as he's alleging. And he also believed that since he wants to dig and search for Troy in the Ottoman Empire, it would probably be easier for him to not be married to a Russian woman who the Ottomans just had a fucking war with. So maybe get her out of here and then he can like cut off that Russian connection.
I feel like, hear me out, thinking about this time period, nobody gave a fuck about his wife. Nobody's asking about his wife. Men didn't talk about their wives like that.
No, but if you're married to not noblewoman, but like a Russian merchant, like the niece of a Russian merchant, and you yourself were the arms dealer that sold the guns.
No, see, because that's it's the arms dealer for the Russian military. That's the problem. It's not her.
Yeah, hold on. I'm not done. But by cutting her off, you're also saying I'm not going to be selling to her family anymore, and her family then sells to the czar.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, I'm cutting off that whole thing.
Sure.
It's arguable.
I would argue that men back in this time period didn't look at your wife as a reason.
But they would look to your wife's connections and to her family.
I guess.
That's the argument.
But in Greece, they're asking those questions?
In Turkey.
Okay.
In under the Ottoman Empire, was an empire that was falling apart at the seams, who was constantly at war with Russia.
Yeah, all right.
And the Russian Empire, by the way, at this point in time, every Russian czar...
Yeah.
Since Peter the Great was handed a letter that remember we did the whole episode?
Yeah.
When we talked about Peter the Great. And Peter the Great's dream was to retake Constantinople on behalf of Christendom.
Yeah.
So he wanted to conquer the capital of the Ottoman Empire. He wanted Istanbul, and he wanted to kill as many Turks as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe being married to a subject of that czar isn't a great look when you're trying to go dig in the dirt for some reason in the middle of Turkey.
I guess, but I also think he's full of lies.
That's also true. So Schliemann, in 1869, checks into a hotel in Indianapolis, and he hires three attorneys, and he files a divorce petition. To convince the judge that Schliemann was not a divorced tourist, he bought interest in the Union Starch Company, as well as a small house on Noble Street in Indianapolis.
Okay.
I looked it up. The house is no longer there. It is an empty field now.
Oh, all right.
Much like his barren divorce.
Whoa.
All right. I'm kidding. The divorce wasn't barren. They had three kids. Schliemann wrote in his diary about living in Indiana. One of the things it is highlighted very heavily.
Okay.
Is his hatred of Indiana blue laws. His diary entry for June 1st, 1869 reads, quote, "The most disagreeable thing here is the Sabbath law, by which it is prohibited to grocers, barbers, and even to bakers to open their shops on Sundays." So he's not complaining that he can't get a beer on a Sunday.
No.
He's like, everything is fucking closed on Sundays, and that's stupid.
It is annoying as hell.
So the divorce court received the perjured testimony from Schliemann. As well as letters from Schliemann's wife.
Oh, what'd she have to say?
There's a couple different letters, and basically over and over again, they just keep saying the same thing. Like, I'm not fucking leaving Russia, you dick. In one letter, Katerina wrote from St. Petersburg, quote, "The sole reason and only reason of all of our disagreement is that you desire I should leave Russia and join you in America. But this I most decidedly decline and refuse to do. And I assure you with an oath that for nothing in the world I shall ever leave Russia, and that I would sooner die than live together with you in a foreign country."
I like her.
On June 30th, 1869, once Judge Blair, who was the judge overseeing the trial, was convinced that the petitioner's wife and young children in Russia were provided for, because it was shown records that he is paying for their estate, he's paying for all those things, the kids' education, all those things. The marriage of, quote, Henry and Catherine Schliemann was annulled.
Okay, congratulations, I guess.
Yep. Schliemann had tricked the court.
Yep.
Like almost everybody who came out from an Indiana divorce, he immediately abandoned the state and fled back to Greece.
Well.
One of the, there in that article from the Hoosier, the Chronicles that I read you, I read it. It was an interview from all these different Germans living in the area at the time, remembering him later. So the article is written after his death in the 1890s. So it's people just remembering his stuff.
Yeah.
One of them said, quote, "He did not seem to be much impressed with Indianapolis." Ekaterina Schliemann sued from St. Petersburg and tried to nullify the Indiana judge's ruling. But Heinrich was already gone, and the lawyers were then kind of left in the lurch.
Oh, he
because
didn't pay the
lawyers? His lawyers were like, "No, he's definitely not gonna flee, Judge," and he just ran off. Heinrich then gets to Greece. He buys a house in Athens.
Okay,
and he's there, and he asks a friend of his, the one who helped him learn Greek earlier, a Greek Orthodox archbishop. He says, "Hey, I need your help. I need to find me a new wife."
Oh, okay. Wow.
He's looking for somebody.
He's going to marry a Greek lady?
Yeah, he specifically.
He just likes women that are going to yell at him. He's like, Russians, Greeks, Me? We're going to yell.
He said, quote, he's looking for someone who would be, quote, enthusiastic about Homer and about a rebirth of my beloved Greeks with a Greek name and a soul impassioned for learning.
Okay.
He also demanded that she be a dark-haired beauty.
Oh, all right.
The Archbishop showed Heinrich three photos, and he picked Sophia. I'm not going to try to pronounce her maiden name.
Got it. Fair enough.
And gastronomium.
Yep, sure.
Sophia was the daughter of the Archbishop's cousin.
Okay.
Convenient.
Sure.
That feels like, yeah, that feels very Greek. Mm-hmm. Oh, you need a girl? I got a cousin. Yeah. They were quickly married. Dr. Schliemann was 47.
Okay.
She was 17.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you were impressed with that 26 and 30 earlier, weren't you?
No. All right.
17.
That's not good. I don't like that.
That's 1869. Mm-hmm. In 1870, when Heinrich Schliemann is 48, Sophie is now 18.
Okay.
Great.
I'm glad that year passed.
Heinrich Schliemann met Frank Calvert.
All right.
Now, Calvert was an English consular official and an amateur archaeologist whose family and some others had owned part of a large plot of land on a large hill in the Ottoman Empire. Now, Heinrich in 1870 had already been traveling around what's known as the Dardanelles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're looking at Turkey, right?
Yep.
There's that area where the Mediterranean, there's that little slit there where you go through into the Black Sea.
Mm-hmm. You got to pull that out and put the apples and onions in there before you bake it.
Okay. You leaned in for that. You leaned in for that.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, there was an area at this point in time where a lot of the different archaeologists and academics had claimed, they were like, no, this is where Turkey is. It's definitely around here.
Yeah.
And Heinrich walked around and just, like, you know, paid guys to dig.
Okay.
And he was like, dig here. Nah, nothing there.
Oh,
dig
so
here.
He's an archaeologist, but he doesn't want to do the digging part?
Oh, no. This is like, I mean, think back to, like, when you're thinking about movies like The Mummy, right?
Yeah.
And you have the guy who's like, I'm the archaeologist. And there's, like, 100 brown dudes digging.
Yeah, he's the one wearing the white safari outfit that
the
has
white
no dirt
linen.
On it.
The white linen.
No dirt on it. He's got like a fancy tent where he's taking hot tea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's, I understand.
Effendi. And he's like, let me show me the scarabs.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of these guys.
Got it.
So he is an archaeologist, but he's also just like, he's also a collector. He's just like, show me the stuff. And if he can't find it, he's like, bah! He gets bored real easily.
Okay.
Because he's rich.
Yeah.
He's a rich dipshit.
Yeah.
Who loves to lie about everything.
Okay.
And married a child.
Oh, God.
All right?
Yeah.
He's Elon Musk. Do I have to be clearer about this?
Okay.
All right. So he's digging around this area, and he's not finding anything, and he's getting really upset. Now, Frank had done some excavation on the land that his family had bought into.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this hilltop at this area called Hisarlik.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he'd been digging around there, and he'd been finding some small signs of, hey, there was something happened here.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff here. We keep finding things. But he was running out of money. And thing about Frank Calvert is he was actually a very good, decent archaeologist, but he wasn't great with cash. But he sees the one thing Heinrich's good at? Fucking money.
Cash money, baby.
So he's like, hey, Heinrich, you should dig here. Neither man had a permit from the Ottoman government. So they start to dig. Over the next 3 years, Heinrich funds excavations of the hilltop that discovers 9 ancient cities, one buried on top of the other one.
Oh, shit.
Schliemann finds pure copper and metal molds, as well as a lot of other metal tools, cutlery, shields, vases, arrowheads, all sorts of different stuff. The day before he stops digging on June 15th, 1873, was the day he finally discovers gold at the site.
Oh.
Which Heinrich describes and declares to be Priam's treasure trove. At this point, Heinrich believes he has found the lost city of Troy.
Okay.
And that this is the gold that he found was the treasure trove of the last king of Troy, whose name was Priam.
And what makes him think this?
Because he's a fucking liar.
Got it. Okay.
He basically is like, I found gold. It has to be Priam's. Ha ha. And he starts running. He runs around with it.
Got it.
He later wrote that he had seen the gold glinting in the dirt and dismissed the workmen so that he and Sophia could excavate it themselves. They removed it in her shawl. However, this was another fucking lie.
I was going to say, there's no way.
This is a fucking lie. Sophia was not even there at the time because she was back in Athens following the death of her father. Now, the other thing that's also important to note is when they started the excavation at this site, she also didn't like to be there because the foreman had assaulted her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so she kept going back to Athens. She did not like to be there.
Yeah. And he didn't fire the foreman?
It didn't say any other information besides
Jesus
that.
Jesus Christ.
It just said
Christ.
That she was assaulted by the foreman. It doesn't say what that means, but we can all assume. She's an 18-year-old girl
yeah.
at a dig site in the middle of a fucking field.
And it's lucky that his body didn't get hidden in those artifacts, y'all.
Yeah. So Schliemann
okay.
smuggles the treasure out of the Ottoman Empire into Greece.
Okay.
Again, illegally.
Yep.
The Ottoman Empire sued Schliemann in a Greek court,
all right.
which was hilarious to me. The Ottomans having to go to a Greek court to shoot Schliemann. I was like, get the fuck out. Because again, at this point, Schliemann is living in Greece, and I guess he's under the protection of the Greek government in somewhat. Schliemann loses the case and was forced to pay a $10,000 gold franc indemnity. So we had 10,000 gold francs.
Okay. Is that, this is similar to, in my mind, and I could be wrong, but when they wouldn't give him permits, don't you just become one of those people that just pays the fine at that point?
Schliemann ended up sending 50,000 gold francs to the Constantinople Imperial Museum, which then gave him permission for future excavations.
There it is.
Yep. It was the next sentence.
He's
so rich. Yeah. The fine's just a part of doing business.
That's the, just get, pay the fine.
Yeah. So remember before I told you about Greece, about his time in Greece.
Yeah.
Because now he's famous.
Okay.
He's the man who found Troy.
Uh-huh.
One of the things he loves to do is so some of the stuff that they find in this
don't tell
this,
me he's wearing it.
He makes Sophia wear it in pictures and stuff like that. And he'll have her like wear it at like events and galas to show off this ancient, because it's like a diadem. There's like a large and a small diadem and there's a necklace.
You gotta explain what a diadem is.
So it's like a very thin crown almost. It's mm-hmm. like a wiry it's like
does it look like what you picture laurels as when people put laurels on their head?
Kind of.
Okay.
It looks more, the best way I would describe it is if you imagine a gold chain
mm-hmm.
that is not cut to go around your neck, it's cut to go around your head. So
like
where a
Laura
would say
it, like we're picturing it like with a woman with like lots of beautiful braids in her hair.
Yeah.
And then she's got a gold chain going across her forehead.
Yeah, with other stuff hanging from the chains.
Yeah, and it's got dangles that come down.
Yeah, yeah, dangles and all that different stuff. So she's wearing that.
She's looking cool.
No, yeah, she's looking cool. And again, her husband is also one of the richer men in the world.
Yeah.
So, Schliemann is now back and forth in the Ottoman Empire and Greece, and he is well known as an amateur archaeologist.
Mm-hmm. Now, whoa, amateur. He discovered Troy, babes.
Yeah, no, okay. So let's talk about how he discovered Troy. So I want you to think, how do you think archaeology usually goes? Do you use a shovel,
mm-hmm.
a pickaxe,
okay,
a brush?
A brush. It's a brush.
Okay. Would you use dynamite?
I would say that if I wanted the things that I was finding to be intact, I wouldn't use dynamite,
uh-huh.
but I could see why someone that used to be an arms dealer might use dynamite if he had access to those materials.
So Schliemann used a lot of dynamite.
Okay.
He basically blew up like half the hill because his thought process when he got to so like I said, there's 9 levels.
Yeah.
9 levels of Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Each of them is a different version of Troy. Whether or not they called themselves the Trojans at that time doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This is the city we believe the myths are based on.
Sure.
Okay. As he was going through it, he decided that when he got down to the second level,
mm-hmm.
when he got down there, he goes, this definitely was the one that the, you know, that Achilles was at with Odysseus and with where the wooden horse and all that shit happened. Later archaeologists were like, no, if like that war that destroyed everything, that happened at the seventh level. And we don't know what's there anymore because he blew it the fuck up.
Yeah.
Archaeologists today say that that actually Heinrich Schliemann did what the Greeks couldn't and actually destroyed Troy. So like,
wait, so he did find Troy?
We believe, yes, he found Troy.
So he accidentally stumbled upon Troy and then blew it up.
The best way to say it is Frank Calvert found Troy.
Frank found Troy.
And then Heinrich showed up,
blew it up,
but then was the one who knew how to publish and get the publicity and all these different things. So it's almost as if imagine if Heinrich Schliemann, right, was brought on to a group of guys who invented an electric car. And they just need an investor.
Yeah.
And then that guy, that investor, gets rid of them and calls himself the founder.
And the inventor.
And the inventor.
Sure. Okay.
And also, he's weirdly obsessed with his young wife.
Does his car run over kids?
Not yet. So Heinrich, he ends up creating the Priam's treasure hoard. He tries to use this as kind of a bribe to the Greek government.
Okay.
So,
Which will work?
He goes, you know, because again, he can't get permits in Greece to dig.
You don't get permits, you pay bribes. I've already figured this out.
So he goes to the Archaeological Society is the one that's in charge of the thing.
Give them money.
They are actually archaeologists. They don't want his money. They're like, no, you blew up Troy. Fuck you.
Oh, fuck.
They keep being like, no, you're an asshole.
You're the worst.
But also remember that this is early archaeology.
Yeah.
This is very early. So they're also like, no, we're trying to prove our system works. You're showing up with fucking dynamite.
Yeah.
So he...
Buy that company.
So Heinrich offers the treasure of Priam to the Greek government, hoping that that would open up the permit process for him.
Got it.
They say no.
Mm-hmm.
So then he offers it to France.
All right.
And France is like, what the fuck, dude? And then he offered it to Russia. And then the Russians are like, didn't you divorce your wife? And then finally...
Has he tried England?
No, it ends up in Germany.
Oh, okay.
It ends up in a museum in Berlin.
Okay.
In 1881, that's where that ends up going. Now, this next note says, between the 23rd of February and the 4th of March, 1874, Schliemann traveled to Mycenae, which is an area in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
He hired workers and made an illegal excavation, digging 34 test trenches around the site, only stopping when being forced to do so by the police.
Yeah, there it is.
So that's in early 1874. Now, fun story.
Okay.
You know what happens a lot in Greece? Governments collapse.
Yeah.
And when that happens, they held an election.
Yeah.
And in 1874, an infamously corrupt prime minister won his eighth election to take over the Greek government. This finally opened up a route for Schliemann to bribe someone.
Hold on.
Yeah.
If this is his eighth election, then how was he not already bribing him if he was already
there? No, because he would win and then he'd get kicked out.
Got it.
Then he'd win and then he'd get kicked out.
Got it.
So this was the guy's eighth and final election, this famously corrupt prime minister who with famously corrupt government. Everything about this dude is just corrupt.
Yeah.
All right? This dude is the Bob Menendez of Greek prime ministers, okay? This is the George Santos.
That joke is going to be so old.
So old. Hopefully it means nothing by this point. He's the George Santos, okay? Does that make
sense? Imagine where he'll be.
Yeah, in 3 months.
Yeah.
So finally, this prime minister gets the permit into the hands of Schliemann. But there's a fucking catch.
Ooh, what is it?
He has to have his excavation overseen by an actual archaeologist. This archaeologist's name is Patagiotis Stamatoticus.
So Pat.
Yeah, we're going to go with Patty.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a very well-respected Greek archaeologist. And just like Frank Calvert, Pat is forgotten to history until very recently.
Mm-hmm.
Very recently, his diaries were discovered.
Or was he just like, this dude is the worst?
On August 1874 in his diary, Patty wrote, quote, Mr. Schliemann conducts the excavations as he wishes, paying no regard either to the law or to the instructions of the ministry or to any official. Everywhere and at all times, he prefers to look to his own advantage. He also speaks repeatedly about how every time they come across things that aren't Homeric enough.
Okay.
So he's like, yeah, this is from, they find something like, oh, this is from the first century BCE. Heinrich Schliemann will be like, demolish it. Get it out of the way. I don't give a fuck. I'm only looking for Homer stuff. And they're like, no, you have to, what are you fucking talking about?
Oh my God.
So he's destroying history left and right. Yeah. And this archaeologist is stopping him. He's making them do grid patterns. He's making them write and draw out and log where they're finding random shit.
Yeah.
Because at Troy, Heinrich would just be like, dig a fucking hole. Like, we're finding pottery. He goes, does it look like the war? No? Then throw it in the big pile of shit nobody cares about.
I'm just saying, this dude would have been really good in America. He's got a lot of American vibes.
Very heavy American vibes.
Yeah.
In letters back to Sophia, Heinrich's wife, and to other people, he often talks about Schliemann, Patty, the archaeologist, is referred to as the enemy.
Oh.
He's often referred to as a government agent and all these other things. Eventually, Schliemann finds a mask, a very famous gold mask, that he says is the mask of Agamemnon, who is a famous Greek king who is involved at Troy. It is not the mask of Agamemnon. Agamemnon probably didn't exist.
Yep.
It is a bunch of other random shit like this. So he's going through all these different things, and he just declares that this is something ancient.
Sure.
No, this is, it's definitely, here's the thing. It's definitely an amazingly preserved gold mask. It's incredible, and it's from a burial chamber. It's definitely a funerary mask. Whose it is, we don't know.
Yeah.
And it's impressive enough on its own.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, it's definitely famous.
Yeah.
It's very, you know what it's giving? George Washington slept here. That's what it's giving. It's very much giving that at all times. So he finds that, along with some other small discoveries that he can take credit for. And eventually he gives up on Mycenae. And then he goes back to Ithaca, where, you know, he does some more stuff around where Odysseus's house might have been. Then he goes to an area called Boeotia. And then he goes back to Troy a few more times, digging around a couple different layers there. Until December 26th, 1890.
Day after Christmas.
At the age of 68, Heinrich Schliemann dies of an ear infection.
An ear infection?
A very preventable ear infection, yes. Because he won't stop traveling. He, like, comes down with this in, like, in 1890,
God.
And his doctors are like, just rest. And then he, like, travels three or four more. Like, he goes to, like, different cities and keeps getting worse.
Yeah.
And it's also like 1890s travel, so it's not like he's like laying down the back seat of a fucking, you know, expedition and being driven across Europe.
It's hell travel.
It's hell travel on trains and
boats.
Big boats and all this other stuff. And it's stressful. So he dies at the age of 68. His wife Sophia was 38 when he died.
You know what? Good on Sophia, girl.
She spends you know what? You're right.
Good on her.
Let's hear it for Sophia Schliemann.
And she's free, baby.
She's late 30s, too, and she's a happy late 30s.
Oh, late 30s?
She knows what she wants.
Husband's dead.
She's
got
rich.
The money.
She spends the rest of her
life. She got a gold mask for no apparent reason.
She spends the rest of her life as a member of the Athenian High Society.
Hell yeah.
Sponsor of charitable endeavors, including multiple like war hospitals when there's wars between Greece and Turkey.
Sure.
To the Ottoman Empire. And she also gives lectures about her dead husband's work, about the archaeology and things like that.
She's like, he was a consummate liar and he blew shit up.
Yep. Later people, like when you're reading about other archaeologists, like Schliemann used to fall under that great man of history idea where it's like, look how the great things he found Troy. Later archaeologists, like, this dude's a fucking con man. And when you go through, it's like everything he did and how he got rich is illegal now.
Yeah.
Cornering markets is illegal. The gold speculation, the way he did it, putting his thumb on it. He just was a fucking con man.
Yeah.
But he did it rapidly enough over enough time.
And he moved a lot.
And he moved all constantly.
Also, the indigo trade, I mean, that's what that dude did with that black paint.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what they did with the he cornered the market on him.
Yeah.
Their home in Athens would eventually be turned into the Numismatic Museum of Athens.
All right.
Numismatic is the study of coins. So if you go there, it's actually now, it was built in an ancient classical style as like a palace. It was their home. And now it is a giant museum that is dedicated to ancient coins. So you can find different Greek, Roman, Egyptian, all this different stuff you can walk through. It's one of the older museums in all of Greece.
So they built a house that looks like an ancient house with columns yeah, and everything?
Like an ancient Greek palace.
That's Greek energy.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Greek energy. my favorite is there's a part of Northeast Philly that has like a predominantly Greek neighborhood like within it.
Yeah.
And you're just like... It's like you're driving through and all of a sudden all the houses have columns and you're like, uh-oh.
Yep.
And then the Greek fest comes around. You're like, let's go.
Yeah.
Like, it's the best.
Yeah. Well, and a big part of that, though, is actually because of Schliemann and Sophia.
Yeah.
Because of the moves towards archaeology and the popularization of it around the world.
Yeah.
You know, as that becomes more popular. Remember, we're talking around this is around the same times where like dinosaurs had just been discovered.
You mean dragons?
Yeah. In the 1860s, they're like that. But I'm saying like finding random large bones, you should be like, yeah, it's just an old large bone.
Yeah.
And then one day someone was like, what if we put them together?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, look at that. It's a big old lizard.
And you're like, I got to go take it to the owl at the Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Fill up my museum.
Yeah. the treasures of Priam were held in Berlin until the end of World War II.
Okay.
Where they were taken by Soviet Smersh agents.
All right.
They were taken as spoils of war back to Moscow,
mm-hmm.
Where they are still in the Pushkin Museum.
Oh, okay.
There was an argument of whether or not they should be returned to Germany. Never Turkey.
What? I was like, why wouldn't they be returned to Turkey?
Nope. They should. They were like, no, these were stolen from Germany. In 1998, a Russian law was passed. The federal law on cultural valuables displaced to the USSR as a result of the Second World War and located on the territory of the Russian Federation, legalized the looting in Germany as compensation for the war and prevents Russian authorities from proceeding with any and all restitutions to the nations they were stolen from.
Okay, so I'm going to work this out in my brain. The Russians are saying it cost us so much money to send troops over there to shut you fuckers down that we're keeping this as payment. Go fuck yourself.
Yes.
Okay.
Basically.
I mean,
but the thing
they're
is,
fighting the Nazis in this scenario.
But one thing though is it shouldn't have been in Germany to begin with.
I know it shouldn't have been in Germany.
He literally stole it.
Yeah, he did.
And went to court and lost the court case that he stole it. And then was just like, here's some extra money. And the Ottoman Empire, which was falling apart at the time, was like, well, I guess we need the money because our people are starving.
Yeah.
And we keep losing wars and territory.
I feel like, and I know feelings aren't, you know, really facts in this scenario. But like I understand Russia in this scenario being like, we're not giving this back to you, Germany. Go fuck yourselves. But I feel like Turkey should be allowed to get it back.
That's what I feel like. I mean, I feel like it should go back to a Turkish.
And I'm not saying that because I love Turkey and I had a wonderful time there.
We had a great time. If anything, this is a pro Erdogan podcast. No, I'm kidding.
No.
That man's a dictator and a shithead.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk too much shit because we want to be able to go back there and eat the delicious food.
Yeah. Oh, and the pomegranates.
We went there on our honeymoon. Yeah. We need to make that clear. I don't think we've ever talked about it. We went on our honeymoon. We went on a cruise of the Eastern Mediterranean.
Yeah.
We went to Greece and we went to Turkey.
Yep.
And Croatia. And I hated Greece with a passion.
Yeah.
We
did not have a good time.
I could not stand how the tourism industry is run in Greece. And then we got to Turkey and I had the time of my fucking life.
It was so fun.
The best way to describe Greece is a place that refused to make payments easier.
Yeah.
I spent like 45 minutes just trying to get a bill. And then I went to Turkey. And then they were like, we don't take credit cards. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And all the ATMs were empty, which and I understand because that was part of the financial crisis.
Yeah, there was
a
financial crisis at the time. But it also was like very, very difficult everywhere we went for anyone to make any sense. Then we went to Turkey. And I remember going to this restaurant and being like, do you guys take credit card? And the guy was like, we take anything.
He was like, ruples.
Yeah.
Euros.
Yeah, dollars. Shekels. He looked at me dead in the face. He goes, I take shekels. I'm like, you take Israeli money? He goes, it converts, it spends. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude.
Such a good dude.
There was something about Turkey that I just really, really loved.
And I liked all the pomegranates. We had such a great time.
Yeah, we had a lot of Panagotic stuff, and we went to Ephesus, and we saw Roman sites.
Yeah.
And we did some shopping, and I liked the rugs.
Yeah.
Super into the rugs.
And you know, your girl loves haggling, and so
yeah.
when you put me in a place where it's like we're negotiating a price,
yeah.
I'm in my element.
Yeah. We had a great time. So big shout out to the Turks. May you forever get back the treasures of Priam, which were actually not Priam's.
But they're yours.
They're yours, though. They're the treasures of Turkey.
So then what happened?
What do you mean?
That's it.
That's the end.
So, but like this guy.
What about
Schliemann.
Yeah, what about him?
Well, like, he's like in history books. He's got like a...
He's in history, but he's remembered... you know, he's remembered as the guy who found Troy because that was how it was publicized.
Got it.
So most history books recognize him that way still, but there's more movement on Frank Calvert and the other people who were involved during the time.
So this has a lot of like Christopher Columbus energy.
Oh, it's 100%.
Where it's like we're like, oh yeah, he did this thing, and then people are like, well, so we've been reading into the history of this.
Yeah.
And turns out.
Archaeologists hate this man.
Yeah.
Because, again.
I love that there's an enemy of archaeologists.
Because he both he popularized archaeology in some people's minds while also doing irrevocable damage to the sites.
It's like when you meet people that are really into archaeology, they're like the nicest, calmest, meticulous, like
you're such a liar.
These are
you're such
these
a fucking
are people
liar. You're such a fucking
spent
liar.
Spent their time really considering the history of the world and like focusing on it, and then like for them to have an enemy, an arch nemesis in the back of their mind, historical enemy.
No,
that's incredible.
Hold on, because I'm gonna time them to make sure that this episode comes out.
Oh, after
before
tomorrow's?
The next one that we're recording tomorrow. Because you just said that archaeologists are what? Historically what? Meticulous?
Mm-hmm.
Calm?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Quiet people?
Okay.
That's why tomorrow
we're
recording an episode which will come out for the listener next week.
Yeah.
Which will be my mother,
an
archaeologist.
Yeah.
With an archaeology degree,
yeah.
Who is anything but calm,
is
anything but meticulous,
no,
anything but quiet.
In
Magistra Perlman, the former Latin teacher from New Jersey,
that's the part.
Will be here.
I
on this podcast, and she will be explaining an aspect of Roman history to the listeners.
Yep.
And I wasn't going to put them back to back like this, but now I'm going to, because fuck you, Mrs. P.
No,
fuck you, Mrs. Perlmania, because you're out here speaking lies. You're talking in grand bullshit like Heinrich Schliemann.
No.
You're the Heinrich Schliemann of this podcast.
I would like to put forth a piece of information. A piece of information. And that is that I believe that your mother, the archaeologist, was probably a calmer, different person before, number one, your dumbass showed up. Number two, your sister's dumbass showed up. And then the other thing, teaching high school broke her, okay? Mm-hmm. She has all the makings of a normal archaeologist, but then she went and taught high school in New Jersey, and it broke her.
I need you to know that everything you're saying right now is wrong. It's completely wrong. Mrs. P, before we go, remember this episode is months away before the listeners will ever hear it. Do you have any final words?
Final words?
For the listeners, like every episode. Every episode, like any last thoughts?
Listen, I hope y'all are having a good time. I'm sure we're having a good time.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much. And, you know, thank you for everybody who likes, subscribes, and for comments. We always love those star ratings.
Yeah.
We've been, you know, I'm sure by this point there's 400 of them.
Thank you.